All right, we've got a lot to get to here today and not a lot of time to do it. The Cobalt Gala, we're going to be giving a recap of that. Also, street preaching, how do you draw a big crowd? We're going to talk about some examples. And theology, why is theology important to understand when abortion and other sins are infecting the world? Also, we're going to dabble in the age of accountability and discuss why God is allowed to kill people and it not be immoral. All of that and more right here today on the Dominic and Yart Show. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to the Dominic and Yart Show. Happy Wednesday. It is hump day, Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. And a lot to get to here today. We've been busy here at the Dominic and Yart Show, Agape Kingdom Fellowship and Colorado Right to Life. The Cobalt Gala, that was Saturday, the Cobalt Gala, and that was an abortion event where a bunch of wealthy pro-aborts get together and they have, they have a fancy banquet and it's a fundraiser where they can raise the funds necessary to dismember children. And, you know, it's a sick event. It's so perverse because they dress it up and they wear the fancy clothes and they think that wearing a suit will make their crime any less hideous. That is not the case. So, members of Agape Kingdom Fellowship, some of you guys in the brightest audience in the country, we went out to protest this abortion fundraiser. And some interesting stuff happened there. So this event was in Denver. And so we went with signs and a pretty big group of us. And, you know, it's always hard to explain this attitude, which I'm going to try to explain. But, you know, when you're out here doing these abortion protests, it's difficult because it's such a serious topic and such a serious thing, the lives of these unborn children. But at the same time, you get to fellowship with other believers and you'll be out at an event like this for, you know, a few hours, and you do get to enjoy one another's fellowship. You get to talk about the Lord. And so you do get some joy out of it, even though it's a serious issue where real lives are at stake. But so that was a blessing to get to labor alongside other believers in the Lord. And what was crazy, so this event, it's in downtown Denver. And I remember going to downtown Denver as a kid, and you saw the occasional crazy person who was, you know, drunk or high or whatever it was. But there was a lot of other normal people, and it made a crowd. And so it didn't seem like there were that many crazy people. But if you go to downtown Denver now, in March of 2022... I remember it was back right when COVID started. When COVID started, all of the normal people, and when I say normal, I just mean not drunk or high out of their minds. The normal people stopped going to Denver, but none of the crazy people stopped going to Denver. So now if you go to Denver, it seems it's very scary being in Denver because there's pretty much only crazy people there. Which, I suppose we're there, so maybe we're a bit crazy ourselves. But so when we went to this event, there was a man there, and we deemed him the Batman. And when we're at this event, this guy comes along, and he gets out of his car, and he has this music blaring in the background from his car. And it's almost like it's like his theme song. And he gets out, and he has a baseball bat. It's like a bright pink or bright orange bat, and he starts banging on the windows of various buildings in downtown Denver. And he's across the street from us, he's catty corner from us, and he's banging on stuff. And one of the guys there at the event, he starts recording, and they call the police just because it's a little bit scary. And the guy points his bat towards us. And then he flips us off, and then he gives us a come here gesture. And, you know, that's always fun when an insane guy with a bat starts beating stuff and then tells you to come here. Anyways, he went down the road a little bit after that and started breaking windows off of cars with his bat. And then, you know, the police came, and there was like a little bit of a chase that was recorded by one of the guys at our church, and he put it up on YouTube. We'll go ahead and have that video in the show description and on kgov.com. You can check that out at kgov.com. Anyways, that was a little bit crazy. Not too much of note with that happened specifically affecting broader national news. But it is sad to see that Denver has become, you know, it used to be a place that was like 20% crazy people to now 95% crazy people. And it is sad to see a really cool city degenerate like that. So while we were at this Cobalt Gala, if you remember, we were talking about a few weeks back the HB 22-1279, and that was the most radical abortion bill in the country that I believe as of right now is on the governor's desk, which, you know, the governor of Colorado, we have no hope that he will, you know, not sign this thing into law, but he does have it now. And one of the representatives that supported this bill, Representative David Ortiz, he was attending this gala, this abortion fundraiser, which we were not aware of when we went. But as he was arriving, one of the guys pointed out, hey, that's that guy from the hearing who, you know, strongly supported this bill. And so we thought, hey, what a great opportunity to confront him. And it was wonderful, because at the abortion hearing a few weeks back, my pastor, Will Duffy, he said that he was going to start holding these people accountable. And the first step in that was he purchased websites, domains in their names. So the head of the committee, Susan Lontine, if you go to susanlontine.com, you'll see that you can't buy that site because it is already taken by Will Duffy. And, you know, I don't believe there's a site up yet. You know, it takes time to develop a site, but that site is, you know, taken. And so it was cool that we told Representative Ortiz about this, that we were going to start keeping him accountable. And then he shows up to this event and we're all there. Kind of shows that we will put our money where our mouth is. But Representative Ortiz, he is disabled and he gets around in a wheelchair. And typically at these events, a person sees your sign and then they walk by and you can't stop them, and you can try and talk to them and get them to stop and talk to you, but usually they don't. Usually they're pretty hard-hearted and don't care about what you have to say. And we felt a little bit bad about this, but you know, he's in a wheelchair and he's getting out of his car, and it takes him time to get out of his car because he's disabled and he has someone there to help him. And as he's getting out, we start preaching to him, and we get, you know, an extra 5 minutes to preach at him, which we would typically feel pretty bad about had he not done so much to end innocent life. And so, you know, you'll take the opportunities you can get to preach to those who are slaughtering the innocent. I used a fun one-liner I learned from none other than Ken Scott. I said, global warming's coming. It's called the Lake of Fire. And so that was really something. There's a street preacher, by the way, who was in town. He preached at Agape Kingdom Fellowship this week. And his name is Jesse Morrell. Jesse joined us at this protest. And it was really an honor to get to meet Jesse. I don't know if you guys know him on YouTube. We'll link to him from the show summary today. But Jesse, he's my family, my brother Michael especially, and I have both watched him for a long time on YouTube, and he's had a big impact on our lives. And he was there, and he's a veteran street preacher, and so we really got to enjoy his company. And You know, I was talking to him, and I was telling him about this one video, which I showed to my father from him at one point. And if you've ever considered going out and street preaching, it's very difficult to draw a crowd. It's very difficult to get a big crowd and to get people who will stay there and listen to you for a long time. That's pretty hard to do. But this guy, Jesse, the way he does it, when you watch his videos, it's fairly uncomfortable, I'll say, but the way he street preaches is in such a smart and wise way. And if you guys know our teaching, we've been going through our series, Nicer Than God. It's a very Nicer Than God study approved method, which Jesse, what he'll do is he will start off by saying some of the most aggravating and harsh and insulting things, and he'll kind of let it stir for a little bit, and people will get angry. And when they get angry, that means they'll want to stay around. So Jesse will say something kind of harsh, and then people will be like, okay, I got to stay around and argue with this guy. And that draws a bigger crowd. And then he'll get, 200 people listening to him for 8 hours. Some of his videos will literally start at, 12 p.m. and go all the way into the night. And it's really cool that he draws a big crowd, and then the crowd stays to watch him. And it really is something crazy. I remember there was this one video of his that I showed my father, Bob Enyart. And in the video, Jesse said something so provocative. He said that Jesus died, and he was yelling this. He said, Jesus died for the white man. And everybody goes crazy because, that's so racist or whatever. And he said, yes, Jesus died for the white man. And he kind of just lets it sit there for a little bit. He doesn't explain himself further than that for maybe about 2 or 3 minutes. And so people are really getting angry. And when he said that, all these atheists, non-Christian Christ haters, they all started shouting, no, Christ died for everybody. And it's really funny. If there's one way to get a bunch of atheists to argue that Christ died for everybody, it is by telling them that Christ died for the white man. And so anyways, so then he gets this big crowd angry, and then he explains, and he died for everybody else. He didn't just die for the white man, he died for the black man and the Asian man and so on. And of course, he was accused of being racist for that, but it was really cool to see. If you want to get an atheist to argue that Christ died for everybody, the way to do that is to tell them that Christ died for the white man. And hey, that means they know, and it means they're learning. So if you've ever been interested in street preaching, consider watching some of Jesse Murrell's stuff. I know he got striked on YouTube a few times, and so he might have he took some of his videos down. I don't know if he took them all down, but anyways, if you're interested in street preaching, he's good to watch, and maybe you can learn something from that. And Jesse is also he's an open theist, which we all know here at the Dominic Enyart Show and Bob Enyart Live, Theology Thursday, that, we support open theism heavily because it really makes the Bible come to life and seem so much more personal. But he is a big open theist, and you wouldn't know that from watching his street preaching. He mainly just preaches the gospel and doesn't get too much into, deep theology. But it was really cool because after this event, I started talking with a friend of mine, and we were talking about what issues do we care about. And he was saying, I agree with open theism and dispensationalism and all that, but I really don't feel like it's all that important. And, why would I spend so much time knowing the ins and outs of, open theism and dispensationalism when I could spend that time, learning the ins and outs of abortion or transgenderism or, homosexuality, and that way I could better argue against those things. And that's a point worth considering. And we were talking about that for a little bit. And I do think that those theology points, I think it is very important to be well-versed and to understand those well. And my friend here, he does, but he was just saying he doesn't have as much of a emotional investment in the theology. But I did point out to him that our theology matters and that we should strive to know God better because, well, first of all, truth matters, right? You know, you have to be seeking after truth your entire life just because truth matters. And if nothing else, truth matters. And, you know, if it's hard for me to learn about a circle being a circle and not a square, I have to put in the effort to realize what a circle is just because truth matters. And, you know, it's worth sacrificing a lot of time, energy, and emotion and effort to figuring out the truth. So that is one reason why theology is so important. But more so than that is that when we worship God, we want our worship to be accurate. And so the more we know God, the better we can worship him. And the better we can worship him, the more we can get to know him. And it's almost like a positive feedback loop. And my friend, another friend who is a pretty strong 5-point Calvinist, he has a way of explaining this idea, which I think is pretty smart. And he says, you know, imagine if I went up to my wife and I told her, oh, Sarah, I love you so much. Everything about you, from your tall figure to your blonde hair and your blue eyes. And in reality, his wife's name is not Sarah. And she's very short and she has brown hair and green eyes. And so, you know, you might be praising this person or loving them. But if you don't know anything about them, your praise and your worship is confused. And if we don't know who God is, if we don't really understand the Bible and who he is and his character, when we're worshiping him, we are confusing our worship and our praise is all backwards. And so I do think it is important to know dispensationalism and open theism and all these other things of theology, just because truth matters and it's important to know who God is so we can worship him more accurately. And also with open theism, I really do have an emotional investment in open theism. And the reason being is that with, say, Calvinism, for example, that says God decreed everything that came to pass. And by the way, Calvinism, it doesn't just decree that God decreed all the good things that came to pass. It also explicitly teaches that God decreed all evil things to come to pass. If you don't believe me on that, you can take a look at what John Calvin said. And John Calvin said that it is ridiculous and cowardly to say that God only permits the evil things to happen. And John Calvin argues that God in Scripture is shown as actively being the author of them, and them being sin. John Calvin argues that God is the author of sin. And so, you know, it's when people, when something terrible happens to them, Christians will go up to them and say, hey, this is God's plan. This is what he wanted. This good will come from this. So your brother who was an unbeliever, he got shot and he died and now he's in hell. Well, that's what God wanted. And you know, if you're a Christian and you're just a so-so Christian, just learning about the faith, and you hear that, you're going to think, wow, that's what God wanted? God seems like a monster. You know, I don't want to follow a God like this. And then people lose their faith. And that's, you know, it's sad, but that's reality. That happens all the time. And so while there's definitely a certain level of we want our ministry and our efforts to be focused on saving the innocent and calling others to repentance, we also have to have a lot of our effort being put towards, you know, understanding who God is and strengthening the faith of other believers. That's another job that we have. And so we were talking about this, my friend and I, and it was a good conversation. And one of the things we were talking about, that and Calvinism, and an issue that comes up with Calvinism a lot is the age of accountability. And if you don't know what the age of accountability is, most Christians do, but if you don't, Christians often they argue about, well, what about if, like, say a three-year-old dies and the three-year-old doesn't understand the gospel? Is that child going to go to hell because he didn't accept Christ into his heart and he didn't say, hey, Jesus, I'm sorry, just because he wasn't able to understand that? And there's a lot of Christians who argue over a doctrine called the age of accountability, which what that is that saying, hey, if there's a kid who doesn't understand, he hasn't reached the age of accountability. So, you know, God will allow him into heaven if him or her into heaven if he wants. And there's a lot of Calvinists, not all, I don't want to accuse all Calvinists of this, but there's a lot of Calvinists who argue that if they haven't reached the age of accountability, they are not the elect, and God sends them to hell. And they use some scriptures, and I would say they twist them a fair bit to argue for that. And that's another thing that Calvinism, it tends to lead you towards that conclusion. Not all Calvinists agree with that, I will say, but it tends to lead you towards that conclusion. And so that's another thing that Calvinism, it really encourages people to hate God. And so I think it's very important to fight against that. But this age of accountability, I don't want to spend too long getting into the ins and outs of it, but there's some support for this. Like Paul talks about becoming aware of good and evil and becoming aware of the law after a certain age. But there's one verse I want to read here from 2 Samuel. This is in chapter 12. If you remember 2 Samuel, that is where David has an affair with Bathsheba, and he kills Bathsheba's husband to try and get away from it. And then that was in 2 Samuel chapter 11, I believe. And then, yes, chapter 11. And then in chapter 12, Nathan, he rebukes David and says, hey, this was sinful and this was evil. You shouldn't be doing this. And then David, thankfully, he repents. But God still does punish David for his sin a little bit. And he punishes David by, first of all, saying that the sword will always be in David's house, meaning that he won't have any peace in his house. But then God also kills David's son. And when God kills David's son to punish David, then David, he says, you know, I'm sorry and I'm sad, but I will get to see my son again. And that is in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 23. Let me pull this up here. All right, verse 23. But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he will not return to me. So this is David, and he's saying, you know, I will die and I will go to my son, but I can't bring him back to me. I can't bring him back from the dead. So this is interesting. David is saying, when I die and go to heaven, I shall go to him being his son. I shall go to my son, and my son shall not come to me. And this is a really cool verse, because it shows the child, when he died, he was 7 days old. And at 7 days old, He died. He didn't have the knowledge and the understanding of Christ, but he's still going to see him in heaven. So it is a cool verse to show that, you know, when children die, if they haven't reached what Christians today call the age of accountability, they will go to heaven. And now, as we were talking about this, and by the way, before I get onto that, it really shows the character of God, right? Shall not the judge of all the earth do rightly? But it really shows when we read the Bible, so many Christians really want to read the Bible and our relationship with God like it's a contract, right? Like there's that one verse that says, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and that he raised from the dead, you will be saved. And that's in Romans. And a lot of Christians see that and they think, okay, well, if you want to be saved, you have to confess with your mouth. And, you know, if there's a baby, the baby hasn't confessed with his mouth. So if he dies, then, you know, too bad, he goes to hell. And that's what a lot of Christians say, because they read the Bible and they read our relationship with God as if it's a contract that some twisted lawyer came up with. But then you ask them about that same verse and you say, well, hey, what about a mute person who cannot speak? If a mute person is sorry and he wants to repent and he wants to confess these things, say he writes it down on a piece of paper because he's trying to meet the contract, but he can't speak. In that case, he's not confessing with his mouth. But if you ask those same Christians, is that mute person saved? You know, they'll agree and they'll say, yeah, of course he's saved, because they intuitively know that the Bible is not this weird contract where you have to meet all these criteria in order to be saved. It's about a relationship. And God is very relational and he's very reasonable. And so a reasonable thing to do is if a baby dies, you don't send that baby to hell, because that's not reasonable. And so a lot of Christians, they argue with that. But so the age of accountability, you know, it's not explicitly talked about in the Bible, but you can infer and you can realize that God is relational and reasonable. And so it is, you know, you're able to say with a certain degree of confidence that yes, there is an age of accountability in the Bible. Now, I don't have much time left here. As we were talking about this age of accountability, my friend asked me, and he was saying, well, why is it okay for God to kill this child, but it's not okay for people to kill children with abortion? And I've got a minute left here. Let's see if I can do this in a minute. And my explanation was that when God kills somebody, think of it this way. Think that this life that God made for us is one box, and another life that God made for us, the second life, is another box. We are not allowed to kill somebody and move them from one box to the other, because God says, thou shalt not murder. That is why we are not allowed to do it. For God, it's just moving someone from this life to the next life, from point A to point B, and it's not sinful for God to do that. But when we do that, it's sinful because we're disobeying God, not because that is inherently sinful. And now, it's interesting, when God moves someone from point B to point A, from the second life to this life, no one gets mad. Like, no one looks at Lazarus being raised from the dead and thinks, how could God move that person from one life to another? Yet we always get mad at God for moving people from this life to the next. We'll talk some more about that next week. Hey, may God bless you guys.